Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 134, we discuss ESPN Plus on the verge of gobbling up rights to another European soccer league, news about a streaming service, possibly getting a cell phone service, Christian Pulisic, a documentary about him, heads to TV this weekend, Ligue 1 is having a laugh, DirecTV Now says au revoir, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnire. Kartik, we've got some doozies this week in terms of some of the news, and probably this show is going to be more news-driven than previous episodes, so we won't spend a lot of time on what we've been watching. I'm still in the process. I've moved, but this first week of getting into a new home, a lot of it's been registering the kids for school, packing, getting furniture, just a lot of different things going on. So and actually, timing-wise, it's good because obviously mostly friendlies on television. I caught the MLS All-Star game on Wednesday night, and there was a bit of a dud. Weather delay, typical Florida weather, and Atleti fielding, essentially starting off with a B team, bringing on some subs. And out of all the teams out there in the universe, probably the one team that you can admire from a defensive point of view, but a team that's not going to light up the stage or the pitch with some beautiful attacking, free-flowing football for 90 minutes, that team is Atleti. And then that team's probably one of the worst teams you could probably put in an All-Star game, because usually All-Star game is all about fun, some skills, really attractive football. And you have Atleti, which admirably, defensively, you get a goal and they hold on and you usually win those games, but not the best look there for Major League Soccer. What about you, Kartik? Did you catch anything that stood out from this past week?
Well, I saw Atleti against Real Madrid. That was interesting. Diego Costa went wild, and Atleti started. So the guys who started on the bench in the MLS All-Star match, and I was quite surprised by Atleti's starting lineup, those guys were starting the match against Real Madrid, and they just went wild. And you know, part of me is thinking, gosh, where was this when four successive years Atleti was eliminated by Real Madrid in the Champions League? Two of them obviously were in the final. One was in. They all went 120 minutes, right? And one was in penalties. So it's thinking, it's funny, they get really motivated for an ICC match, but Costa was very good. They have such an interesting team. João Felix is potentially, and this is why I don't watch a whole lot of friendlies in the summer. I know everybody gets very obsessive about them and also chastises me for not watching them, more of them. And then what ends up happening is 3-4 weeks into the season, toward the end of August, no one cares that you didn't watch the friendlies because you've watched 2 or 3 weeks of serious competitive matches. But what I've seen this summer, João Felix is potentially the breakout signing anywhere in Europe this summer. There have been some high-profile signings, but I don't know that there's a signing that's even remotely potentially has the upside of him. So that's I was very impressed by him. I'm very impressed by Costa. I'm just kind of impressed by how Atleti is going about their business. Kieran Trippier is already learning Spanish, something Gareth Bale didn't do. So that's, I think, also very kind of interesting. So I enjoyed watching that match. Watched LAFC in Atlanta, which was another high-scoring match right after. There's a lot of question marks about DeBoer with Atlanta. They either grind out 1-0 wins or they're getting opened up, which is what happened in this match. And then obviously saw a couple other assorted matches. NWSL, Utah, North Carolina was an interesting game. North Carolina finally beat Utah and did it not necessarily behind their biggest stars. So that was good. And ESPN is falling into a groove a little bit with this NWSL coverage, and they'll have another match on Friday night. And then tried to keep an eye on the Audi Cup. Spurs were impressive in their match there, but injuries and Pochettino not terribly happy after the match about general things. been kind of distracted this week. Miami FC, the team I work with, or one of the teams I work with, is in the NPSL National Championship. So I'm actually traveling with the team to New York City, and we face the Cosmos, which will take me kind of out of circulation the first weekend of European League action, which is this weekend, although I'm going to still try and catch as much of particularly championship matches that I can, and maybe some Eredivisie as well.
All right, Kartik. So New York Cosmos against Miami FC. Where can listeners watch that game online?
Okay, so it'll be Jonathan Yardley and Jonathan Barojo, who is a former Fort Lauderdale striker, Miami FC, and New York Cosmos player. So, a real veteran of lower divisions and has done well on the mic in his first few games with the Cosmos. They'll be on mykuju.com and the NPSL website, npsl.com, and it'll pop up in some other places, but definitely mykuju and npsl.com, and it'll be the second successive year Jonathan Yardley has called the final. He's been the Cosmos announcer for a number of years, but he's been loaned he was loaned last year to the league to call the final, which was in New Jersey, which did not include the Cosmos, but also included Miami FC and travel to the match. So that'll be good, and he's a guy, actually, that I think we saw him for the first time a couple years ago, right, when he started doing Cosmos games and then some European U19 and U21 games for ESPN during that summer. He's become better and better as time goes on, and he's a guy who's really, I mean, he calls a number of sports, but seems to call soccer properly. I'm not trying to be condescending, but calls it really well. Mm-hmm. So I'm always happy when I see that there's a match, an important match, which he's calling, and he'll be calling this match.
That's good news, because I'll definitely look forward to watching that one and listening to the commentary. When Jonathan Yardley started doing those ESPN games, he sounded like a baseball commentator, just his cadence. And I think over time he got better, and I haven't heard him in a while, but looking forward to listening to him on that one. And all right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. And this one potentially could be absolutely massive. I'll have you kick it off.
Yeah, in fact, speaking of Miami FC, there was a lot of high-fiving going on around the Miami FC office yesterday when the story broke, which is that ESPN Plus is adding the Bundesliga to its growing soccer portfolio, reportedly beginning next year. Obviously, they have one more year on their Fox contract in the U.S. It's funny, people and this is just, again, an informal survey of people in the Miami FC office. People don't realize you could actually buy Fox Soccer Match Pass or whatever it's been branded as now and get all the Bundesliga matches. But it is the price point is cost prohibitive. And there's just this kind of feeling that that the Fox isn't covering the Bundesliga properly. So there was just a lot of excitement. I was sitting in the office when this story broke, and I'm telling you, everybody was excited about it. And then I get on Twitter and everybody's excited about it. The question is, does this mean there will be fewer Bundesliga matches on actual terrestrial television? Think about this. They've had several free-to-air matches every year on Fox, right? They've had consistently every week games on FS2 and maybe games on FS1 if it doesn't conflict with NASCAR. So are they effectively pulling back in a way, even though everybody seems very excited about this? Although the thing it does tell me, Chris, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, is that ESPN Plus has become such a one-stop shop for soccer fans in this country, that if there is a product that is not on ESPN Plus, that's not the Premier League, because everybody knows what the Premier League is, then you're acting as if the product doesn't exist, because it's on something else. And even though Bundesliga in theory had the second best TV deal in the country, people wanted it on ESPN Plus.
So I have mixed feelings about this. So first of all, we must say that this has not been confirmed by ESPN, that essentially, they're saying no comment on this one, which is similar to the response they gave me when I reported about what did I report recently about ESPN Plus? Oh, the Copa America, that they were going to be broadcasting it in English and in Portuguese. And I had the story about 2 months or 3 months before it was made official. And at that time, too, they made no comment on it also. But it looks very likely that this is going to happen. The mixed feelings I have is looking at this is that if you're an ESPN Plus subscriber, this is fantastic news. Here's another league that's going to be coming, starting in August 2020, that you have access to. I'm sure every single game. I'm sure it'll be world feed commentary, HD quality broadcast. This is going to be great, in addition to everything else what you're already getting. On this one, though, Kartik, I feel that this is not a good thing for the Bundesliga. I went back to our podcast we did about 2 or 3 months ago, which was something along the title of where we think that La Liga and the Bundesliga should go in the next TV rights deal. And you and I discussed it for about 25 to 30 minutes. And we both came back with, you know what? Fox is probably the best place for the Bundesliga, even though Fox has not televised the league as well as it could have done. But they have the distribution. They have over-the-air Fox, which is huge. That goes into over 100 million homes. They have the FS1, the FS2, Fox Soccer Match Pass, etc., etc. So for me, for the Bundesliga, I'm sure in this deal they feel okay. I mean, I'm sure ESPN's offering a lot of money for the rights to this, because this really elevates ESPN Plus to a whole other level. But I think with the Bundesliga, they're going to miss some stuff here. Yes, it is conceivable that ESPN could take maybe one, I don't know, the Bayern Dortmund game and put that on ABC. I mean, that would be fantastic news if they could do that. That would bring it into a whole, I mean, a ton, millions of new homes. But it's likely that we'll get the same treatment that we got from Serie A, which is one game a week on the weekends, live on ESPN2 on a Sunday morning, and then all the other coverage live on ESPN Plus. So I have mixed feelings. I'm positive about the ESPN Plus, kind of feeling that the Bundesliga is they've hit the heights of Fox. This is a step down in terms of, yeah, ESPN's got a fantastic game, but this is a step down.
You just hit a really important point I had not thought of, and I think no one has been talking about in their euphoria about this reported deal. Saturday mornings during college football season, the Bundesliga plays in windows where they're just not going to be on an ESPN channel.
Yeah.
It'll be Sundays, and we saw that with Serie A this year, right? I mean, the games – you know, you began to see some more mixture in when games were broadcast on ESPN 2 or ESPN News once college football was over and college basketball was over. But
and prime time for Bundesliga games, usually the big games, usually it's 9:30 Eastern time on a Saturday morning or the 12, yeah. or 12:30 Eastern time. The Sunday one is usually it's not the biggest teams we play.
Eastern or noon Eastern, right?
Sometimes
that they might show, but the matches that conflict directly with college football and college football pregame and game day and all these things, they won't show on their terrestrial channels, on their linear channels, excuse me. And here's the problem, Chris. This is ultimately – there's so many reasons why the Premier League deal with NBC is the best deal. And it's not just because NBC produces things better and because NBC is one of the three historic legacy major networks. It is also because NBC does not show very much college football or college basketball. Mm-hmm. That is a big part of it. So there is never any preemption. The only time there's ever a preemption of a Premier League match, it's bumped to CNBC because there's a Formula One race, which, by the way, the fan bases of the Premier League and Formula One tend to overlap pretty heavily. So people don't complain about that. If it's for a college football game, people would complain. So, yeah, you know, you just brought up something I hadn't thought about. It will be like Serie A. The games that will be on Fridays or Sundays. Now, they'll show that Friday game every week, right? I don't know what they're showing at that time on ESPN. I guess they have shows they produce.
Right.
So if it's a Dortmund match or a Bayern match, they'll show it. But here's the other concern, since you're bringing this up, and we're trying to balance our discussion of this. I think the teams outside of Dortmund and Bayern, even though, again, Fox has not been great at covering the league, there has been enough exposure for the Eintracht Frankfurts of the world and the Schalkes of the world that we've developed an appreciation and understanding of those clubs in the last few years that we may not have had before. And, for example, a guy like Haller being transferred to to West Ham this summer. Everybody has seen him play now. Everyone knows about him because he's at Eintracht. 4 or 5 years ago, if that same transfer had been made, people wouldn't know the player as well. I'm wondering if we're going to be stepping back and we're only going to know about Bayern and Dortmund after this deal begins. Assuming, look, they haven't confirmed it, so it's possible it won't happen. I'm pretty sure it's accurate reporting just based on the way ESPN operates and the way and the timing and everything. So, yeah, there's a lot to discuss. I mean, I'm sorry if people are listening and they've been euphoric as the people I interacted with yesterday were, and now this is a bit of a come down, but that's what we do here. Right? We try and analyze this stuff objectively.
At the same time, though, too, Kartik, what we're missing with ESPN's coverage thus far of European soccer, club soccer, is the pregame, the halftime, the post-match. Yeah. And that was something. We've criticized Fox so many times because some of their analysis and the consistency was pedestrian. You never knew when they're going to be in a studio. Sometimes it was mailed in, like really, really poor. Other times it was really good. So it was very inconsistent. You never knew what you were getting. And with ESPN, you're getting essentially nothing. I mean, maybe 5 minutes of just the commentator talking, building up the game. Halftime, just, you mean, live video from the stadium, but no analysis, and a highlight reel, post-match, nothing. So this hopefully pushes the envelope a little bit to say, okay, all right, ESPN, I think it's time to actually have some in-studio analysis or some chat or discussion. They have the talent available. Whether or not they're willing to actually utilize that is another question. But I think for the Bundesliga, I think in many ways they're kind of swayed by the ESPN name, and saying, okay, Fox did okay. They could have done better, but ESPN, that's, I mean, the worldwide leader in sports. I mean, this is going to be fantastic. And I guess at the end of the day, it is, and I'm sure ESPN again offered a ton of money for these rights. It probably was the best deal available to them, because what other deals would have been available? Who knows if Fox was even interested in renewing the rights to the Bundesliga? Or maybe they were kind of hemming and hawing about the TV ratings not being as good as they could have done. They put a lot of effort into broadcasting the Bundesliga, but still, so much more they could have done. Like for example, Kartik, I'll ask you a question. I'm not sure if you know the answer yet, and I'll ask the listeners. This weekend, this Saturday, is the German Super Cup. You got Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. Yeah. What channel is that game on?
I don't know. It's on Fox Soccer Plus, I'm going to guess.
No, it's on over-the-air Fox. And here we are, we're recording this on Thursday morning. That's fantastic news. That's news that they should be screaming from the rooftops. Oh my God, the German Super Cup, kind of it's the community shield of the Bundesliga. Massive game, massive match. I mean, Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich, I mean, looking really exciting in the build-up in the preseason. Now we have this game. It's going to be on Fox. It's going to be a doubleheader. I mean, that game, and then followed right after that is an MLS game. This is big news. I haven't seen or heard anything about it. And that's one of my biggest issues with Fox's coverage of the Bundesliga, is they're not promoting it. They didn't do it since day one. They're not doing it now as they're going into the final season. And at least with ESPN, at least you'll get that promotion. You'll get that exposure. You might even see ads on terrestrial, I mean, regular television, linear television for the Bundesliga coverage, now available on ESPN starting August 2020.
But here's a fundamental question, though. So we talk about the job ESPN did getting Serie A more exposure this year, and that's a common narrative. But they were going – again, no insult towards BN, but we know BN's problems. They were going from BN to the ESPN platforms. With the Bundesliga, they're going from Fox – and matches that are over the air, at least when these two teams play, Dortmund and Bayern. I mean, that's regularly, at least one of those two matches is on over the air each season. And now with the Super Cup, that's added an additional layer. And in fact, it was such a big match. ESPN, which has had the German Cup rights for years, remember they would always put that match on one of their ESPN channels, and the rest of it was on behind the paywall on wherever on ESPN3 or ESPN Plus, the rest of the German Cup action. Do we see any tangible growth on ESPN a year or two from now? That's any different than any other league? I don't know that it'll get the bump Serie A did. I'm thinking it won't.
Yeah, well, even the TV ratings for Serie A on ESPN and ESPN2 during this past season, there was nothing really to write home about. I mean, some of the games had over 100,000 viewers. I think the highest might have been maybe, off the top of my head, maybe 140,000, 150,000 viewers, which is pretty small. Not all those games were Juventus, of course. What I do know from several of my sources that have told me, when ESPN got the rights to Serie A, they overpaid for them. They spent a lot more money than what BN was paying. Not only that, but they overpaid for them in order to get them. And if we remember too, that was the deal through IMG, and they also got the FA Cup as part of that. So it's very likely that ESPN probably did the same thing with the Bundesliga and said, okay, we're going to make ESPN Plus the home of soccer. We're going to make it, you're all European diehard soccer fans, as well as all those other sports that they have. This is going to be the home, and we're willing to invest in the future in terms of, you know, generating as many subscribers as possible. Maybe in 2 to 3 years from now, increasing the price. In the meantime, too, over the next probably 18 months or more, is cross promoting Disney Plus. All right, you've got ESPN Plus. Now get Disney Plus, add that on for another $10 a month, or maybe as an ESPN Plus subscriber, maybe get that as, I don't know, $7.95 or something like that. And they're building a huge audience, and they're banking on this being the future of broadcasting, that in, say, 5 years from now, all of us pretty much will have ESPN Plus, as we have to have it in order to access our soccer. At the same time, though, Kartik, I think, for ESPN Plus, this is a home run hit. For the Bundesliga, the likelihood that they're going to get some viewing figures now, I mean, some of the big games on over-the-air Fox, they were getting, 400,000, sometimes 500,000 viewers, which are big numbers, historically speaking, for the Bundesliga. The likelihood of that happening again, unless some of these games will be on ABC, which is possible. I mean, maybe one game a year. I mean, but Bayern against Dortmund on
ABC. Right, and it'll be the second match, right? It's the second time they'll play, right? Every year it'll be the March or April match. That'll be the only game they show, probably, over the year.
What this does, though, Kartik, too, at the same time, is this means that Fox is even more out of the European club soccer business. If and when they do lose the Bundesliga at the end of the season, they're done. All they have then is, which is a lot to mention, but they have the Women's World Cup, they have the World Cup, they have those big properties, as well as, of course, other leagues from around the world, mostly North America. But they're out of the European soccer club business, and at the same time, to me, this pretty much kills Fox Soccer Match Pass, because you take the Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2 out of the equation, what do you have left? And it's hardly anything, especially at $20 a month. Maybe they'll end up graveyarding that streaming package and just saying, okay, let's move on and kill it and offer their current subscribers foxsports.com or access to there for some of the games, like the MLS games, etc. All right, Kartik, let's move on to the next news item, and that is that AT&T is launching yet another TV streaming service this fall, which means that AT&T is killing off DirecTV Now, the name DirecTV Now, and they will relaunch it as AT&T TV Streaming Service. So we'll have to wait and see what happens in the next few months. There's been rumors, actually, that it's very likely that the new DirecTV Now, which is going to be the AT&T TV, is going to require an AT&T branded Android TV streaming player in order to actually watch this. So, it's sad in many ways, too, because when DirecTV launched, it was actually, in terms of the user interface, yes, it was unreliable. They had problems with it crashing in the beginning, but it was one of the most sexiest streaming services available. And then the AT&T acquisition of DirecTV happened, and now everything's becoming AT&T, and it's very much kind of the big monopoly kind of thinking in terms of that, rather than some DirecTV more intelligent decisions, more for the consumer. And now it's all about AT&T. So it's sad news for DirecTV Now subscribers. You probably will be getting some messages, some communications, if you already haven't done so, in the next few weeks to the next few months to talk about the changes. But unfortunately, this probably means the death of DirecTV Now.
Unfortunately, I think that's the handwriting's on the wall. And there are rumors, persistent rumors, that AT&T might sell DirecTV completely. That's
right.
As they continue to expand, and I don't know if it would be something that's enforced by the Justice Department or something they just do, but this is unfortunate, because I think it was the first full on streaming suite that was mainstream. We've things like Sling and Fubo have become more mainstream since, but that had all of the bells and whistles built in, and the interface made it feel like the best of television and the best of what you get on your tablets and laptops.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm going to be sad to see it go, but this is what happens when you get these big giant companies gobbling up some of these. DirecTV was big too, but basically kind of taking control over DirecTV and all the good things it had done for soccer in the past. And now this DirecTV is no longer anything similar to what we've been used to in the past. This is really now AT&T big time.
Yeah, to the point where their logo is even the AT&T globe.
Yeah. All right, Kartika, then some big weekends, some big things happening this weekend.
Yeah, so starting Friday at 2:45 p.m., which is Luton Town's return to the championship, by the way, against Middlesbrough. And Luton Town's had three promotions now in the last few years. And that's on ESPN Plus, as you would expect. We're going to have a lot of championship Eredivisie action. There was, I think, a League One match that ESPN Plus is showing this weekend. So check out the program guides. European football regular season action is back starting this weekend. And you mentioned the German Super Cup on Fox, which I was not aware of. But a lot of football this weekend. The European league seasons are back.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it personally, especially with the move, but also not having watched a lot of the friendlies. I'm looking forward to watching meaningful matches that you mean have, you mean in terms of especially the opening weekend of the championship, which usually there's goals are flying in at both ends. It's really entertaining, and like you said too, Eredivisie, so both of those on ESPN Plus. We have the schedule for both of those leagues at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as on the homepage of worldsoccertalk.com. We've got an article that goes into more detail about watching the championship via ESPN Plus and some of the other streaming options available out there. So looking forward to it, and hopefully Leeds United will be as exciting as they were last season. Now moving on, Sling TV has lost the Fox Sports regional channels due to a carriage dispute. In fact, Dish Network and Sling TV are considering permanently dropping Fox regional sports networks, but they hope to offer a price break if that happens. That's bad news, really, for some Major League Soccer clubs, too, that have some of their games available through the Fox Sports regional channels, as well as even Liga MX. Some of the games are aired on some of the regional Fox Sports channels, especially in, I think, Southern California and New Mexico, that area. Now, speaking of which, in terms of Sling TV, some of you may have heard that that the T-Mobile and Sprint merger has been approved, and that's going to happen really quickly. How does this affect soccer fans? Well, T-Mobile currently owns two cellular networks, which is Boost and Metro PCS. And what happens in terms of the deal between T-Mobile and Sprint, the merger, is that T-Mobile has been forced into selling Boost and Metro PCS. They are planning on selling those cellular networks to Dish. Now, Dish owns Sling TV, and they're planning of naming the new Dish wireless company. Well, they're thinking about making it Sling Wireless. Just as Sling TV, you've got Sling Wireless. And as part of that, too, I wouldn't be surprised if you're a Sling TV subscriber, you could get a package deal, too, where you could get add Sling Wireless to your Sling TV streaming service in the coming months, the coming year or so. And it could be some interesting possibilities there. Maybe unlimited data for any coverage of Sling TV that you're watching through Sling Wireless. that's a possibility. So it's definitely one to watch out for. Now, Kartik, this is interesting too. On Sunday, something to take out that DVR or that streaming service and record this one. This sounds interesting.
Yeah, as part of the E60 series, ESPN's Sam Borden will sit down with Christian Pulisic, now of Chelsea, for an exclusive interview and feature. It'll air 9 a.m. on Sunday, and this is something a lot of people are excited about. There's been so much hype about Pulisic and Chelsea this summer in the U.S., more than I had anticipated.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, too, to see how NBC covers Christian, because, do they hype him up? Do they take more of a measured response? What are they planning on doing in terms of the way that they analyze him? Are they going to go all in, like say Fox would, and have, I don't know, a 20-minute discussion on this one player? We'll have to wait and see. And actually, hopefully next week too, I'll have an interview with the executive producer from NBC Sports to go into more detail about that and some other exciting developments that are happening at NBC Sports for the Premier League season. Last but not least, Kartik, and this is when I opened up the podcast and I mentioned we've got some doozies. This one is a doozy of a story. And that is some comments that the Ligue 1 CEO made about U.S. television distribution. So for those listeners who don't know, which is probably the vast majority, I think it was 4 Ligue 1 clubs came to the United States last month for a couple of friendlies that were played in Washington, D.C. There was absolutely zero media coverage about this. I don't think any of the games were actually televised. And there was even the crowds, too. The crowds were tiny. I mean, there was more empty seats than there were people in the stadiums. And it's just really poor promotion. I mean, a league like this should be doing much, much more to try to actively promote their league and clubs in the United States. This was not a good look. But anyway, while they were in town, Jonathan Tannenwald from the Philadelphia Inquirer got a chance to interview him, the CEO of Ligue 1, and he had some really interesting comments. So let me read those out. So the Ligue 1 CEO says, "We are not satisfied by the broadcast coverage in the U.S. Ligue 1 cannot be powerful if Ligue 1 is not distributed by Fox or ESPN. We don't want to do something against beIN Sports. We want to do something with beIN in order to increase the value of the rights. We are having ongoing discussions in order to recover the numbers, which are not big enough in the U.S. What is good for Ligue 1 is good for beIN, and vice versa. I mentioned those two because I know those two, but there are others." So this is really interesting on several different levels, can't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing is that the rights for Ligue 1 U.S. rights are owned by beIN Sports until the end of the 2023-2024 season. So we were several years out from actually those rights expiring, which to me then, kind of the elephant in the room in this then is that Ligue 1 is essentially saying, okay, we're talking to other people. To me, reading between the lines, this says that they're obviously concerned about the longevity of beIN Sports. How much longer will beIN Sports be in business? And will they be able to fulfill the rights deal that they currently have in place? There's definitely some other takes that can be taken from these quotes, but what's your thoughts on these quotes from this gentleman?
They're pretty explosive because, first off, there is the intertwined ownership of beIN and PSG. Then there is the fact that PSG is not reaching its potential in this country because they're stuck on beIN. And I see more and more PSG shirts, more and more awareness of PSG in this country than ever before. But there's not, they're not at the level of, obviously they're not at the level of the English clubs, but they're not even at the level of the Real Madrids, the Barcelonas, the Atletis, Bayern, Juventus, and the two Milan clubs in terms of awareness and people who support them in this country. Now, I think they probably would be close to that level, except for obviously the Real Madrid Barcelona level, but they'd be with the other clubs I mentioned, maybe even higher if they were on another network. So this is all very, very interesting. And you have to feel for beIN. I think it's a situation where they've done the best with the properties they have. And they have tried to give this league in particular, because of the cross-ownership relationship, maybe more exposure than it warranted, which got Serie A fans quite unhappy for a number of years. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, they just don't have the bandwidth or the various additional distribution platforms, even though, quite frankly, being Connect was a decent product in the market. But they just don't have the distribution platforms or level or numbers that are going to satisfy these leagues who are all craving some sort of push in the U.S. market. And I don't know how this gets resolved, because I think we've made it pretty clear how we think it's going to go with La Liga after this season and their relationship with Relevant Sports and where that takes them. But I had just assumed Liga because of the Qatari connection, the connection to Qatar, there would be that would be the last holdout. But based on these quotes that our friend Jonathan Tanwald got, they're ready to move right now. And they're looking for a way to get – the way I interpret mm-hmm. it, Chris, they are urging BN, who has typically had the policy not to sublicense their properties, to sublicense this property to Fox or ESPN. That's what exactly. I get from it.
Exactly. Yeah, he says, we don't want to do something against BN. We want to do something with BN in order to increase the value of the rights. And you're absolutely right. They must be having discussions or trying to have discussions to say – going to an ESPN Plus and saying, okay, would you be interested in sublicensing some of these games, or could you put a PSG against Lyon game on ESPN2? Is that possible? And I'm sure ESPN would say, this is just hypothetical. Of course, we'd love to. That would be fantastic. The issue is that BN Sports has, I'm sure, a very tightly written contract that says they have the exclusive rights. By BN Sports letting any of these games go to sublicense these out, financially it will help them. But in terms of leverage, in terms of the appeal of wanting people to subscribe to BN Sports, that's not going to help BN Sports in any way. That's, if anything, going to limit the number of subscribers, and the subscriber numbers are dropping substantially because of losing DirecTV and Comcast, and that's not going to help them in those situations. So... yeah, but at the end of the day, Kartik, it's a chicken and an egg story, because even if, perfect scenario, if the CEO of Liga was able to do a deal and BN Sports said, okay, all right, we need some financial revenue to come in to help us because we've lost all the subscriber fees from DirecTV and Comcast. We're willing to give you three games or two or three games a weekend, and maybe one of those games or maybe two of those games are on ESPN Plus. Maybe one of them is on FS2 or something, and then one of them maybe is on ESPN, big ESPN, or ESPN2, whatever it may be, on television. The likelihood that those TV ratings would be sizable enough to be relevant are almost zero, unless it's PSG. And even with PSG, I mean, we've seen in previous seasons too. I mean, they run away with the league. I mean, it's such a one-team league. At the end of the day, there's very little interest in Ligue 1. That's what the Ligue 1 CEO has to realize, is that having Ligue 1 on BN Sports, they've had the most accessible and best coverage of that league in the United States ever. Ever, ever. The league has never had that type of focus. And now BN Sports, they did everything that they could to promote Ligue 1 in the beginning of the contract that they had with them. A lot more games were on television, and they saw the same numbers, the TV numbers that we saw, which were pitiful. Nobody is interested in Ligue 1 unless you're a purist, you're a soccer purist, or you're a scout, or it's actually an entertaining league to watch. There's nothing wrong with the league itself. It's just in terms of all the competition, all the different things happening, how relevant is Ligue 1? PSG, yes. I see more PSG shirts in public than I do MLS shirts. And my guess is most of those people watching PSG and not watching them in Ligue 1. They're watching them in the Champions League. It's kids or teenagers. You mean kind of watching PSG?
Even to the point, PSG wore the jumpsuit, the Jordan kit in the Champions League, and that's what everybody ran out and bought.
Right.
And they're not wearing it in league play. Yeah. I mean, that was very noticeable, by the way, Chris, just based on which kit people were buying.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's all about the brand. So PSG has a fantastic brand. viewership and interest in actually watching that team play is pitiful. I mean, in comparison to other teams, there are other teams with less well-known brands that get a lot more viewers because the league is more relevant. And the accessibility of beIN Sports, if you really are interested in Ligue 1, beIN Sports Connect is probably more available through more streaming third-party platforms than Fox Soccer Match Pass or NBC Sports Live or some of these other ESPN Plus combined in terms of accessibility. You can get it through Fubo, you can get it through Sling, you can get it through PlayStation View, you can get it through all these other places. So it's interesting. I mean, Ligue 1's CEO is obviously trying to build up the league and say, hey, the reason that we're not doing great is because of beIN Sports. They're the ones to blame. When the reality is that the league has done absolutely hardly anything to promote the league in the United States. I mean, PSG has come here for the ICC. They sent these four teams here. But you can't just do that. You need to do a lot more than that. You need to be in regular contact with the journalists, soccer journalists, U.S. soccer media, on a regular basis. You can't just show up and expect everyone to come. And I think these four games in D.C. are proof of that. I mean, yes, it wasn't PSG, but I think you had, Marseille. I think you had Bordeaux. You had Saint-Étienne. You had teams that have some diehard interest, for sure. There are pockets of diehard interest in these teams in the United States, small pockets, albeit, but it takes time. And so I think in many ways, for Ligue 1 CEO to come out and say, yeah, I think we cannot be powerful unless we're distributed by Fox or ESPN. Fox or ESPN are going to laugh them out of the room and go, like, why would we put your games on our television stations? Because they're not going to generate the numbers. They're going to satisfy the advertisers. ESPN Plus might be interested, but on a very limited... I mean, I'm sure they're not willing to pay a lot of money for the league because there's very little interest in it. So, I don't know. I just thought that the league owns CEO's comments were very bullish and seems to me he just doesn't get it. He's kind of just thinking that, okay, yeah, the ticket to success has been on Fox or ESPN. And he says a couple of others. I mean, NBC probably is one of them. And, you know, I don't know, CBS or somebody like that, some other big broadcaster might be another one there too. But I don't know. I just thought this was really, really strange comments for somebody who should understand what's going on and seems to be completely clueless. All right, Kartik, TV ratings. Not a bunch. We don't have a bunch this week, but we do have a few. And again, we'll update those probably next week on worldsoccertalk.com with all of the listings. But just a few to throw out here. Real Madrid against Arsenal on ESPN, 352,000 viewers for the ICC game. Then the Real Madrid-Atleti game on Friday, last Friday on ESPN, the one that you watched, 276,000 viewers, which was right before the LAFC-Atlanta game. From Major League Soccer, 270,000 viewers on ESPN. And then last but not least, LA Galaxy against Portland on FS1 on I think it was either Saturday night or Sunday night, 171,000 viewers. So again, FS1 still is having issues in primetime MLS broadcasts. Those numbers continue to be far, far lower than what ESPN is doing. Listener mailbag. First up is Jim Fusick, and he says, can you discuss the LFC, the Liverpool preseason tour coverage on BR Live? Did the club make more money with a deal independent to ICC? Personally, I feel they realized their fan base was driving the turnout, and using their LFC TV announcers allowed for the freedom to choose their own cities and timeline. Klopp hates preseason tours. They finished this necessary evil in less than 7 days. Is this a model clubs will follow? Any reaction from relevant sports?
Jim, you're completely accurate in your view of Klopp. I was going to add that my sources tell me Klopp was not happy with the ICC, not happy with the training facilities they were assigned in advance of ICC friendlies or in between friendlies or between ICC matches, right? The ICC doesn't say they're friendlies, but they really are. He had actually even remarked to someone that I spoke to, they would have been better off just staying at Melwood and playing Tranmere and you know, all the local clubs, right? Maybe Fleetwood Town, et cetera, Wigan, in friendlies there than what they went through the previous few years in the ICC. So I think this was crafted specifically because of Klopp's preferences. So you're absolutely right on that. As far as this being a model other clubs will follow, it depends whether they have the ability to generate enough revenue to meet their projections or whatever their needs are from preseason touring without going through the ICC. I think it's more possible for Premier League clubs. So Liverpool obviously has done it now. Manchester United, Chelsea, maybe Arsenal, and certainly maybe Manchester City and Spurs, but I'm not quite sure about those two. I think those two might still need to be in the ICC if they can be. But those other three big English clubs. As far as the other clubs from the continent, no, I think that the ICC provides a platform and ability for them to generate those revenues, get that touring. It's a necessary evil economically, and it gets them in big stadiums in front of big crowds and a lot of media. So that's, I think, very useful for a lot of clubs. But for Liverpool, your analysis is spot on, and I don't expect them to go back to the ICC unless it's forced or until they have a new manager. Because I had gotten – and again, that wasn't just one source. There were several sources telling me Liverpool – Klopp in particular had his own opinions about it. And now, as it turns out, Liverpool had 97 points or 96 points in the league and won the Champions League after playing in the ICC. So maybe those preseason preparations weren't as bad as Klopp had thought at the time. But yes, he had a lot to do with this, for sure.
So according to my sources, which are different than your sources, Kartik, what I heard was that Liverpool FC, that the club themselves, were disappointed by the turnout for games in the United States. They were disappointed by the number of people that greeted them at the airport upon arrival. And they were disappointed overall in terms of ticket sales. Now, having said that, they did pretty well by going independent to ICC. So they had, I think, 40,000 at Notre Dame. They had a smaller crowd at Yankee Stadium, which is an abomination that shouldn't even be used for soccer in the first place anyway. And I believe Fenway Park had a sizable crowd. But all in all, and actually my sources have told me too, that it's not just Liverpool. So I think almost all of the Premier League clubs that came to the United States this summer said that they were disappointed. They were disappointed in terms of the turnouts and kind of the interest in those teams. And in hindsight, they felt that they should have probably gone to Asia or elsewhere, because it feels like, and we've talked about this in last week's podcast too, it feels like this is really kind of a turning point in terms, I mean, there's a lot of burnout, I mean, from soccer fans. Ticket prices aren't getting any cheaper. And there's definitely an apathy, partly probably because of the U.S. team, the men's team, crashing out of the women's World Cup 2018. But other things too, in terms of all the competitions this summer, and there's just so much going on. I mean, how
and these teams come every year.
Yeah,
this is the feedback I've gotten. These same teams come every year, and the people who are excited to jump in their car or buy an airplane ticket and fly or drive to Charlotte or Nashville or wherever, some far flung place for them to see an ex European team. They've now seen them, and they also and. I don't want people at Relevant or people who are match promoters to take this the wrong way. Maybe they will, because I mean, I know they have to do what they have to do to generate the revenue and interest they do. But there is also an increasing sophistication of American-based European football fans that these matches really don't matter. So,
But still, those games get more viewership than games that supposedly matter, which are Major League Soccer games.
Well, okay, that's fine. I'm not arguing that point. Well, the point I am arguing is, do they get more viewers and more interest than a Liverpool versus Arsenal match in the Premier League?
No,
or
no.
In the Champions League? Obviously or not. In the FA Cup? Well, the FA Cup now we can't quantify anymore, right?
Right.
But, in the past, no, they don't. And I think we've gotten to that point where, okay, we'll watch it because it's our team. There's also less – you're watching it a little less passionately too. So I think we've hit that point. It's a maturity thing, and I think it's a good sign about the maturity of the American audience that these friendlies aren't as much of draws. And I know last year when Bayern and Borussia Dortmund both came to the country, it was a pretty big deal. Borussia Dortmund now has come again. And it wasn't as big a deal for their fans, although there were some that made the trek to Notre Dame for the match against Liverpool, because there's so much intertwined. There's just so much similarities between those clubs, and obviously there's the Klopp factor too, intertwining them.
I find it so condescending, though, that several people on Twitter and social media, and you just mentioned it, Kartik, is saying that the reason that the attendance is because of a maturation of the actual U.S. soccer fan. The U.S. soccer fans are becoming smarter about the decision making. I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it has basically down to dollars and cents. It's like these tickets are very expensive. There's so much choice, so many teams available that, yes, I mean, the diehard Liverpool fans will go to see those games at Notre Dame and Yankee Stadium and in Fenway Park and other places. But, I mean, it's more the casual, the mainstream fan who may not be an LFC fan, may not be a Dortmund fan, but is looking at the game going, okay, do I spend, I don't know, a few hundred dollars to take my family to go see this game, or do I watch it on television? But I don't think it's, to me, it's very condescending to say, okay, now all of a sudden, this is because of U.S. soccer fans suddenly becoming more intelligent about the game. U.S. soccer fans have been intelligent for years about soccer.
I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that. I mean, I think I disagree with that. I think U.S. fans have gotten more sophisticated. I'm not sure U.S. fans were that intelligent about the game 8 to 10 years ago. It sounds very condescending, yeah, but I think, and there's still signs with the way the national team is covered here, the men's national team, that a lot of people in the media and a lot of U.S. fans just don't get it. But although, Chris, I think it's really telling about the Barcelona-Napoli match next week. I think this is a great opportunity for Napoli. It was a great when Everton came over to the ICC 1 year and got matches against high-profile super clubs in Europe. I think where the ICC and these American friendlies are still really good is where you've got the Napolis of the world, and you've got clubs, maybe Fiorentina in the future, now that Rocco Commisso has bought them. Everton, I think I'd love to see West Ham be in the ICC because they've got a substantial fan base, and it would be great for them to play Real Madrid in kind of the atmosphere of a big American stadium with a lot of fans, and the opportunity for their fans to see them play Real Madrid or Barcelona or someone of that ilk. I think that's where we need to evolve to, and I get the sense Relevant knows that and has already done that by inviting Napoli to play Barcelona in a one-off matched up the La Liga Serie A Cup. Napoli spent most of the last decade in the top three or four in Italy. And they do not have the brand recognition in the United States that maybe they should. Their glorious era was with Maradona before soccer was a mainstream sport here. So I still think that these friendlies have a real purpose, and I'm actually pretty excited Napoli is getting this opportunity to play Barcelona in a big American stadium.
Okay, but having said that, though, too, so if you're a Barcelona fan, you're going to be, I mean, probably first in line or first online to, on Ticketmaster to try and get tickets to this game. If you're a Napoli fan, you're going to be probably first in line to say, okay, wherever I live in the United States, I'm going to this game. But if you're not a Barcelona or Napoli fan, and there's a question whether or not Messi's going to play or not, would you buy tickets? And you and I, Kartik, we live in Florida. This game is going to be next week. For me, if I was really willing to, I would make an effort to go out of my way to watch this game, get a press pass, and go see it. Yourself included, you're in South Florida too, but this is a game I'm going to pass on because to me, I can just watch this on television. Why do I have to actually go to attend this game unless I'm a Napoli or Barcelona fan?
Yeah, I made the last-minute decision to apply for a credential. I mean, literally last minute, an hour before the credentialing closed, just because it's local, and I'm thinking my initial intention was to go see Orlando play Atlanta in the Open Cup in the semifinal. Now I'm thinking this is less of a drive after the trip to New York, et cetera. But it's still possible that I will pass on that match and go to the Open Cup match in Orlando, because that is a pretty historic occasion for Orlando City that they have gotten this far in the U.S. Open Cup after traditionally being eliminated by other teams from Florida, Miami FC, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, et cetera. And also, the Orlando-Atlanta rivalry is still a thing where Orlando now, we're 3 years in, they haven't beaten them yet. So, but yeah, would I pay? Okay, but I'm media, right? So if I'm a fan and I'm buying a ticket, I think you're right. I guess I wouldn't buy a ticket.
Yeah, and again, if I'm a Napoli or Barcelona fan, it's a slam dunk. If I'm not, it's like, okay, how much are tickets, and am I willing to make that effort to go, and how much is parking, and how much is, I mean, concessions? Because I mean, that's part of the reason I think the ICC's had trouble this summer is because there's so much soccer coverage on television and on streaming. We're spoilt for choice. So there has to be a convincing reason for us to go to the stadium to actually attend a game. And yes, I mean, I love soccer. I love watching soccer in person. I love soccer watching soccer on television. But there has to be, I mean, a relevant reason to go to these games. And relevant is the one that is promoting this Serie A La Liga Cup. And I haven't been impressed with relevance marketing of ICC in general this year, especially. And we've seen that from the attendances. In past years, they were averaging about 60,000. This summer so far, those games are averaging 30,000. So in just a few years, they've dropped by half. Now, going back to Jim's initial question, can you discuss the LFC preseason tour coverage on BR Live? Last week's podcast, we went into a lot of detail. If you're an LFC fan, Liverpool fan, then you probably thought it was great for the most part, except some streaming issues. Hopefully those will be resolved soon. Did the club make more money with a deal independent to ICC? I don't know for sure, but I would believe so. Them being in charge of their own destiny and setting ticket prices and doing the deals that they need to do to bring these teams in to play against, it's very likely that they are actually generating more revenue, more income, not going through ICC. And like you said, Kartik, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe not next year, but in coming years, when Premier League clubs come to the United States, if you're in the top four, you're probably thinking, okay, LFC could do it. We can do it too, but better. And they're likely to go ahead independent of ICC.
But you have to be careful with this, okay? And I don't want to take whatever comes out of my mouth, people will be angry about. But Liverpool has a more passionate following. Okay, you can look at numbers and say, oh, Manchester United gets the same ratings, or Chelsea gets the same ratings. Liverpool has a more passionate following than any other club in England, and I believe any other big club in Europe, with the possible exception of Borussia Dortmund. Those would be the top two. So the intensity of Liverpool fans would lend them to travel to these sorts of friendlies, pay the $2.99 for the BR Live, and also make sure they watch the matches on TNT. I am not sure Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal, maybe Arsenal, but I'm not sure about Manchester United and Chelsea and their fan bases in the U.S. And I don't think that's the case with Manchester City at all. Spurs tend to have an intense fan base, but it's smaller. Pull this off quite as well. Now, I think they'll try. They might pull it off, but they probably won't. It won't be as easy to pull it off, is what I'm saying, as it's been for Liverpool. And I expect Liverpool to continue to do this. I don't think they'll be in the ICC for the foreseeable future. I could be wrong. Maybe they'll be pressure because they're not in the ICC and everyone else is. But until that pressure comes, I think this is the model now for them.
So next up is JP. JP says, in regards to streaming versus cable from last week's podcast, I agree with Kartik. The pendulum has swung to cable, probably being the cheaper option overall if you follow multiple sports along with other entertainment. None of the streaming options have everything needed, at least in my area. PlayStation View had it all a few years ago before dropping beIN, and I was set to switch to them when my contract expired, but then the beIN drop happened. As my contract was coming up again recently, I was looking for ways ahead of time to possibly combine streaming service and get all that was essential. PlayStation View plus the international sports option from Sling seemed like it would get it done and come out a bit cheaper. But then PlayStation View dropped a regional sports channel essential to watching hockey and baseball. Yes, View has beIN Sports now, but in order to get that regional channel and ESPN, beIN and NFL would have had to either get Fubo paired with Sling Orange or YouTube TV paired with Sling TV and their sports package. Taking internet into account, that becomes more expensive than the cable bundle with internet, etc. So based on what's provided and convenience, easier to flip channels and cable instead of switching through multiple services for different channels needed via streaming. Cable sadly comes out on top. Lucky Verizon is available in my area, and they have beIN in HD, along with access to authenticate and watch Univision Deportes online, so I don't need BR Live. And again, going back to what JP said, a lot of it depends on what each individual is looking for. So you can get internet access through your local, I mean, DSL or fiber or cable, whatever it may be. And then depending on what things you're looking for, what things you want to watch and your family wants to watch, you can save money, but you have to do your homework, and it does take time. And we've built a whole bunch of resources on worldsoccertalk.com that go into more detail about who offers what, all the different options available to help make it an easier decision, whether it's television or streaming. Monty Reed says, in the Africa Cup of Nations, Robbie Knock was the commentator for the final. He was calling the match from the stadium in Cairo. He was in Cairo calling matches throughout the tournament. So, Monty, thanks for the heads up there. I guess for that goal in the final of the Africa Cup of Nations, he must have just missed it and just couldn't tell that it had gone in the back of the net. But thank you for the info there. Azer says, I wish you guys stopped talking about ESPN refusing to... Oh, actually, no. I wish you guys started talking about ESPN refusing to air ICC games being played in American stadiums on American soil, not overseas. So I think what Issa is trying to say is that a lot of these games in the ICC, not all of them are on ESPN. Some of them are on ESPN Plus. Part of that is also because, I mean, the games for the ICC that are played in Asia, those games are anywhere from 5:30 in the morning Eastern time to 7:30 in the morning Eastern time, kickoff times. And to have those games on ESPN or ESPN2 doesn't make any sense. ESPN Plus would be the best destination for those. He goes on to say the Dutch Super Cup final recently was on noon on Gold TV, a channel that millions of people don't have. The Emirates Cup final was on a Sunday on ESPN3. Arsenal versus Lyon was ESPN3 will also stream 8 or so. ESPN3 will also stream 8 or so German Cup games starting on August 9th. NBC released the EPL TV schedule. Please focus on the football that matters. 99% of listeners don't care about the League's Cup, Women's Club Football, or the two ESPN MLS commentators, etc. And Aza, while I appreciate your honest, heartfelt feedback, people do care. And for a lot of listeners, myself, me and Kartik and I, love soccer, so we will watch kind of any brand of soccer, any league of soccer from around the world, and that's really kind of what sets World Soccer Talk apart from some of the other talking heads, where they're just watching Major League Soccer or just watching the Premier League, is we will enjoy and watch and observe and analyze all sorts of leagues from around the world. And yes, we do watch the Premier League, and yes, we do watch some of these other leagues more often, but it's that time of the year too, where those leagues are not being played, and they're starting up in the new seasons in the next coming weeks. So anyway, thanks for getting that off your chest, but I wanted to respond to that. Johan Pena says, hello. I have heard that there is a strong possibility that beIN Sports is going dark very soon. Is that true? And if so, what's happening? What's going to happen to all the soccer stuff that they have?
Oh.
Well, and again, I've heard rumors too. I haven't gotten any sources or anyone to say on record, but I've heard rumors too that they are in financial trouble. One person said that it's possible that by the end of the year they could be out of business. Again, this is something probably that is very much changing, I mean, on a monthly basis in terms of looking at the future of beIN Sports. So beIN Sports have seen just in the last few months Kevin Egan, Kay Murray, Terry Lee, and others leave the network and go on to other things. So from a financial perspective, they're not paying those salaries now. Yes, at the same time, they're not getting the subscriber fees, the millions of dollars from DirecTV and from Comcast. So it's probably a financial situation that's in flux. Hopefully they will be around for quite a while to fulfill these contracts that they do have. But going back to the quote that Ligue 1 CEO said, it does, reading between the lines, does paint a picture that they're concerned about the future of beIN Sports, and they're looking at options just in case if beIN Sports did end up pulling the plug and going dark. that they can still have those games televised. And maybe that's what Ligon's hinting at, is if the worst possible thing happened, maybe there's a potential for a backup to be available to hit the ground running to go ahead and take on those rights and continue broadcasting the league. Last but not least, Alan Huffman says, I was wondering if you know how the commentators are decided for MLS games on ESPN Plus. I live in Indianapolis and watch a lot of Seattle Sounders games. About 95% of the non-nationally televised games I watch, I always use the commentators of who the Sounders are playing, and I don't understand why. It would make sense to me that you would use the commentators of whoever the home team is. This seems to be the case for USL games. I have season tickets to the Indy 11 and attend most home games, but any I have missed normally have the Indy 11 commentators in away games I watch. Have the opponent's broadcasters. I don't understand why MLS doesn't follow the same schedule. My best guess is location, and they use the commentators from the team closest to you. Thank you for all the hard work you guys do. World Soccer Talk, the pod, is a must-listen for me every week. Well, thank you, Alan, for the kind comments there. We really appreciate that. Kartik, you probably have a better idea in terms of the decision-making process and why this is happening.
I'm actually surprised to hear this because with USL, they do take the home announcers, and in some cases, those home announcers are not actually at the ground, but they're calling it off monitors. But they're still, that simplifies the process to take the home announcers. We did the same similar thing in NASL when we had matches that would stream on the NASL site or on ESPN3. That, for example, for Fort Lauderdale, we broadcast all our matches home and away, and one of the seasons, because of whatever staffing issues, even though I was working for the club in a media relations capacity, I had to do those games also. We did the away games also with our broadcasters, but NASL streamed the on ESPN3, streamed the home announcers for those. USL does, as you said. The Sounders thing is interesting. I'm actually going to ask around about that, because I had assumed they would just use the home announcers of any match. And if they're not using, for example, Seattle plays Colorado, and they're not using Seattle's announcers if Colorado has a broadcast of the match, which, by the way, in MLS, most clubs do broadcast their away games, have their own announcers broadcast their away games. It's like American sports, right, with the regional sports networks, where you broadcast. You don't take the other team's feed necessarily for your own broadcast. I will ask and find out. That's quite a stunner to me. And I watch enough MLS on ESPN Plus, and now that I'm just thinking out loud, there have been cases where I've been surprised that Philly is playing Chicago. The match DC's playing New England. The match is in Foxborough, and they're using DC's announcers. I've noticed that. So it does happen in MLS. I'll ask about that.
All right. Well, if you have any questions of your own or any feedback, disagreements or rants and raves, you name it, we're here to help you. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com. Again, that's web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. So in closing, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends and social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, heading into another weekend of soccer, we've got the championship kicking off, we've got the Eredivisie also kicking off this weekend, as well as the German Super Cup, and the Community Shield, I think on Sunday with, Manchester City wearing a classic kit without a sponsor's name on it. That'll be interesting. But what should they do?
It looks a lot like the early 70s kits, by the way. And now that the crest looks similar to that crest, even though it's not the same crest, it works. It looks very much like if you've seen photos of Rodney Marsh in the latter stages of Mike Summerbee's and Colin Bell's career, among others, for Annie Lee, it's that kit. It really is similar to that kit, 71-70 time period.
Enjoy your football.